From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm David Strever, guest hosting for Evan Dawson. Our connection today was made in New Haven, Connecticut, where I was welcomed into the local cycling community and went from a casual bike commuter to a serious long-distance rider and, ultimately, a big fan of bike racing. Now, if you've never watched a bike race, this hour is for you. We're going to talk all about the Tour de France, Unchained documentary streaming on Netflix, and I have a panel of experts, local and from afar, who will give you a rare behind-the-scenes look at what makes the biggest bike race in the world so fascinating and just how you can get into it. I've been watching the Tour of France for years. My whole family watches with me, even my now five-year-old, and we love the Netflix series, which just had its second season. I've heard from friends and family that it got them hooked on watching the actual tour as well, all 21 days of it. It's by Box to Box Films, the same people who made the Netflix hit Formula One, Drive to Survive, and it follows a similar formula to bring newcomers into the sport. Now, bike racing isn't as popular in the U.S. as it was before the scandals of the Lance Armstrong era. But that's changing. Americans have superstar racers again. You have Sepp Kuss of Colorado, who won the Spanish version of the tour this last year, La Vuelta. Matteo Jorgensen of California, who's riding his first Tour of France right now and actually took second today while racing the French Alps. Now, we also have a local hook. Although there are only 13 Americans racing at the highest level, two of them come right here from the Rochester area. AJ August and Magnus Sheffield, both of Pittsford, race with one of the biggest teams of all time, Ineos Grenadiers. We're going to talk about every aspect of this sport and show how anyone can get into it. Unfortunately, we did have a last-minute cancellation. The team behind the Tour of France Unchained has had to cancel. They're busy filming season three. We have some great guests. I have Cosmo Catalano, the host of How the Race Was Won. He podcasts with the Escape Collective, and he's been breaking down bike racing for years. I've been watching him myself, first on YouTube, now on Instagram, and he was kind of my first introduction to the sport. He's calling in from Carlisle, Massachusetts. Hi, Cosmo. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Thank you. And then in the studio with me, I have Andy August. He's a former owner of Park Ave Bikes. He's a bike racer himself, and he's a mentor to his son, AJ August, and their family friend, Magnus Sheffield, who are now racing in Europe. Thank you so much for coming in, Andy.
Well, thanks for having me.
And I also have Scott Page. He's the owner of Full Moon Vista Bikes, which is out on University. He's organizer of both the former Downtown Criterium bike race that was held in Rochester. It's an official UCI event. And the Rochester Cyclocross race, which is held every September in the Genesee Valley Park. Thank you so much for being here, Scott.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I just want to start with the most basic thing of all, which is, what is the Tour of France? And I'm just going to quote from the trailer for season one of Unchained, because I love it. It's very poetic. The Tour de France is very simple. It's a bike race. Every day, over 21 stages. And if you can go further in suffering and sacrifice, you have a chance to win. In my words, it's the ultimate endurance competition. The riders are tested on their ability to withstand the physical, mental, and emotional stresses of bike racing at that level. And they kind of break down. You see a human side. And that's what brought me into the sport, just kind of seeing who these guys are, what they're doing, and how it affects them. That was my pull. What about you guys? Andy, what got you really into bike racing?
Well, I got into bike racing back in the bike riding actually in the mid-80s when mountain bikes became popular, and I started riding mountain bikes. And then I started working at Park Ave Bike and ultimately becoming a partner there. And I got into bike racing here when I lived in Rochester.
And how do you think you inspired your son and his friend to go to where they've gone?
Well, I'd say myself and my wife, we have a lot of passion for the sport, and we do it a lot. So we were lucky enough that the kids wanted to do it with us.
That's great. What about you, Scott? What first brought you into the sport of biking?
I always grew up with two wheels. I was originally more of a motorcyclist. I did a lot of motocross when I was younger. But I always used biking as a way of training. And from there, I just got into all kinds of bike racing and worked for Andy for a while, which is kind of neat. And then opened up my own bike shop and I was always passionate about putting events on, and I wanted to see if I could, you know, go to a higher level and put on some international events, and it's been quite a pleasure.
That's great. And Cosmo, would you can you share with us something that got you into bike racing, some of those early stories that drew you?
Well, I got into the sport really from being a cross-country skier. It was I was in college, and everyone on the ski team rode bikes in the spring, and it was kind of eye-opening to have a sport where you could seriously draft. You kind of be sitting in a group going along at 30 miles an hour, barely working, you know, almost breathing through your nose. And that was really cool, and I kind of got hooked from there.
You know, that's great, and that's actually one of the number one things I wanted to talk about today was this weird aspect of the sport. If you don't follow bike racing, you tune in, you hear Tali Pogacar won the Tour of France. But there's a team aspect to this that I think is super confusing for anyone who tunes in. There's 22 teams, 8 riders per team. I think 176 riders start the Tour of France each year. And those teams all have their own totally different goals. So is that does anyone want to talk a little bit about the different roles that a rider might play in a team? Maybe, Andy, if you want to start off, just tell us what your son is doing, maybe for INEOS.
Sure. Well, my son, AJ, he's hired, and they're trying to develop him into a general classification rider like Taddy. Not sure if he'll ever get there, but his job would be, you know, potentially to win stage races. And in the stage races, you have teammates. Like you said, there's 8 teammates per team. And it's a little hard to understand if you haven't raced a bike or actually been in a group of riders. But the drafting is super important. And it's one person couldn't do it all himself. So the team will have riders that will actually sacrifice themselves by riding on the front of the group and doing a lot of work, and where the leader of the team can rest and wait till a moment when it's important for him to go hard, or her.
Cosmo, would you say anything about what it's like to be in that pace line, what type of benefit you get as a rider?
Yeah, it's almost like a cheat code. Like it's really like you are somehow defying the laws of physics. When you're in a pace line behind especially a strong rider whose job is to help the team go fast on flat sections, you are going almost faster than you could pedal yourself with very little effort. It's just a really cool, magical feeling, and it keeps you nice and fresh for when it's your turn, you know, maybe going up a hill to put in a big effort.
And then you also see, you know, there'll be someone on the team whose job is just to fall back, go to the team car, get a bunch of water and snack for the guys, and then, you know, zip back up and rejoin them with a bunch of water bottles, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the team. It's interesting. It's a team sport, but it's a sport where there's an individual that wins. So it can be kind of hard to understand that. Taddy seems to be winning the Tour de France. He's definitely winning the Tour de France and will probably win it. But his team has done a lot to enable that.
Absolutely, and I think if people watch Netflix, they definitely saw this. There's some rivalries, right? There can be riders who. Maybe they're not very happy not being the top rider on their team. You see them kind of push to get up there. I don't think we've seen too much of that this year, but definitely in years past, that's been a big issue. Now, let's talk a little bit about the individual who does win, right? So they time riders from start to finish on each stage. There's 21 stages for the Tour of France, 21 days of racing. They start at the same time, and then whoever finishes first is the overall leader for that day. And they add all that time together. And the person who has the lowest time is the overall, they will win in the end. Right now, that is Tadej Pogacar. He's a young Slovenian racer. He won the Tour in 2020 and 2021. Last year, it was Jonas Vingegaard. Definitely butchering that name. He's a Danish racer. Maybe Cosmo could correct me in a moment, but he's a Danish racer who won in 2022 and 2023. And he seemed unstoppable until a bad crash earlier this year. Cosmo, can you talk a little bit about Jonas and maybe correct my bad Danish there?
Yeah, I do not purport to be a great Danish speaker, but I Jonas Vingegaard, it's actually spelled Vingegaard if you read it just in English. and I guess they kind of swallow that D at the end. But yeah, he's an opposite kind of rider from Tadej, who's very almost like a clown prince, as I've described him in the past. Just very outgoing, loves to kind of mug for the camera. And Jonas Vingegaard is very self-serious, focused on what he's doing. He's still pretty young too, but also he's married, he's got kids. He is very famously was a fisherman before he was riding bikes. Just a real, not sort of the same kind of electric profile you get from Pogačar, but very, very dominant when he's on his game and when his team is on its game.
He was about 3 minutes behind. I didn't check the time gap today. He was about 3 minutes behind yesterday. Can you tell the audience what does 3 minutes? It sounds like nothing. We think, right, this is a 2,000-mile ride. What's 3 minutes mean?
3 minutes is a lot. 3 minutes is you'd expect it to be at the very end of the race, the total gap between first and second. And so, you know, losing 3 minutes on any given day is near disaster for someone whose focus is the overall title. Pogačar has been very strong this year, especially kind of in this last week where he has sort of struggled in the past. He's been just totally dialed in. His team has been very strong. And he made a statement today, putting a lot of time into Vingegaard.
Yeah, I think maybe it's 5 minutes now. Don't quote me on that, but it does not look like he's going to lose the Tour of France right now.
No.
And then there are some other competitions. Up until today, Jonas Vingegaard was in the the consolation jersey, the King of the Mountain. Does anyone here want to weigh in on the polka dot jersey of the best climber, supposedly the best climber?
I'll give it a shot. The polka dot jersey is for the best climber, and within each stage, almost all the stages, they have hills where the rider that gets to the top of the hill or the mountain will get a certain number of points, and you add up all those points as the race goes on, and that person is in the King of the Mountains jersey.
And that, I don't, Cosmo, maybe you can give me a historical perspective. In the last couple of years, it seems like it's almost always the yellow jersey who's wearing that. Today, it's Richard Carapaz, the Ecuadorian rider. I think he just broke the total to win. But in the past couple of years, it has been the yellow jersey who's in both leading both of those, right?
It can be. It tends to overlap. The Tour will periodically alter the rules. So I believe that at one point they had kind of double points for the mountains competition on the finish climb. And what happened was a lot of guys who are winning the Tour overall, not surprisingly, also win at the top of these mountain stages. And so they try to make it so there are separate winners of the title, but we've definitely had a good crop of strong climbers recently winning the Tour, and I think that has kind of fostered that overlap.
Absolutely. And there now, okay, one of the other stories I really wanted to talk about today was the green jersey. There's two riders who I think really kind of tell that this year. Biniam Girmay of Eritrea has become the first black cyclist and the first black African to win a stage in the Tour of France, and also to win the green jersey. He took three stage wins this year. It's a great success story from a rider who last year put himself out of contention when a champagne bottle he got for winning a stage in an earlier race exploded, and the cork hit him in the eye. That was his season done. So he's made a return to racing this year, and he's really surprised people. He took a bunch of stages that no one expected him to win. And Cosmo, I was going back through some of your old videos, and I see you've been dialed into him for a couple of years. Do you want to talk a little bit about him as a racer?
Yeah, he's a great story. He's really versatile as a rider. Usually in the sprint stages, if you've watched the Netflix documentary, you kind of get a feel for this. You have riders who are very, for cyclists anyway, pretty large and muscular. And Girmay is he's more slender. He's not a total... You know, he's not like a pure climber who's very, very light, but he's not as big as these other guys. So he has to be a little craftier. He tends to do really well in finishes where there has been a split in the peloton. So a smaller group of riders is contesting that stage finish, or there's an uphill finish. And he's very, you know, he has to be crafty. He has to be cunning. He can't just hide behind his team. And so it's really fun to watch him trying to try and suss out these wins. And it's been an awesome tour for him.
And Andy, can you, or Scott, can you define what a sprint is? As we're talking, I'm thinking, you know, for some people, this might be a very mysterious idea as well.
Well, a sprint is the finish of a race, and typically the race will come down to a group. It may be a large group. Sometimes it's the whole peloton, everybody in the race that's coming together at the end of the stage, or it could be a smaller group. And it's the sprint would be an all-out effort, and typically the person who would win the sprint would be somebody that has really good, fast twitch, quick muscles. But, you know, again, they don't do it themselves. They require teammates to lead them out. So they'll do a lot of work before the sprint happens to set the sprinter up. And then at the last moment, maybe with 100 or 200 yards to go, the guy that's going to win or try to win will go out on his own and finish it off.
Yeah, and you'll see them kind of line up behind their teams. If the sprint's going well, and it's a flat stage, you'll see kind of the two or three usually teams kind of line up in front of everyone. And that's always the goal, is to get them, carry them as close as you can, probably 200, 300 meters.
Right, yeah.
And then let your sprinter launch free. And what type of speeds do you think they get up to?
Probably up to about 50 on the flats now, I'd say. Close to it.
Yeah.
Miles per hour.
I've done 50 miles an hour one time on a bike going down a mountain, and I'll probably never repeat it. So that's credit to them.
It's fast.
And that, yeah, a lot of times they call that green jersey consistency. It's the points jersey. It's also a consistency jersey. And so I think that's why a rider like Binyam is so interesting in it, because he really is just very consistent. He can handle, he's got the right type of build and the right type of just the skill set to kind of do that. There's another really big story in sprinting this year, which I think even very casual fans probably have heard about, which is Mark Cavendish. He's a 39-year-old bike racer from the Isle of Man. He specializes in sprinting. He's older than most of the competition, and he's won 35 stages now, setting the world record of all time for stage finishes. He's a very exciting rider who came back from some serious injury to do this. Cosmo, do you want to talk a little bit about Mark Cavendish?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's had an incredible career. Like you kind of look back when he first, I think his first tour win was in 2008 or 2009. And it was just such a different sport. You still had these big, you know, his first couple stage wins were behind a big, long sprint train of five, six guys, you know, thinning out the peloton into the finish. And now they've reduced the number of riders who are in the tour there. It's a little bit harder. You usually don't have a team that's totally focused on sprinting. And so you end up in a situation where you have two or three people kind of doing that sprint lead out. And he's completely adapted, like changed the way he rides to continue winning through those changes. And there was a period in the late teens where he was kind of considered done. And he came back to the tour, I want to say 2021, and picked up a bunch of stage wins, just kind of proved all the doubters wrong. And it's been cool to see him take this victory, take this record. It wasn't a given. You know, he only won one stage this year. It looks like he's only going to win one unless something completely wild happens. And he really had to pick his moments, work for it, and just pulled it off on a finish that I think was textbook for him. Just perfect. Finding those moments where he can move for the field and then getting the front right at the right time when no one else could get him.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, we're out of chances for sprints. There's another day in the mountains, and then it's very unusual finish to the Tour of France this year. It's a individual time trial in Nice. They had to move it because of Paris, which is hosting the Olympics. And that's actually another discipline I want to talk about. We have a caller on the line who's got a question about this. So the time trial is its own thing, and it's also a thing in the Tour of France. Jennifer from Geneva wants to know what happened to the team time trial. Jennifer, you should be on.
Yes.
Yes, so you called in to ask about the team time trial, and would you like to ask your question now?
So it seemed like that disappeared. Maybe I just missed it, but I wondered if that's been taken off the plate. It's not very fun to watch, that's for sure. But is that gone, or did it happen and I missed it?
As far as there was no team time trial this year. I don't know when the last time they had a team time trial in the tour. There was one, I believe, in the Giro earlier, which is the Italian tour earlier this year.
Okay, yeah, I was just curious about that. And the other question I had is I'm always wondering how much the racers know during the race as far as what they're getting on. Are they all mic'd up to a radio so they're getting information from the team car? You know, how much is what they're getting from the team on the radio versus how much they're just getting from looking over their shoulders?
All the riders are mic'd up, and they're getting a lot of information from their directors that are following the race in the car. Yep.
There's actually one that kind of thank you so much, Jennifer. I'll put you on hold and maybe pop this one to Cosmo. There is a Team Visma, the team of Jonas Vingegaard, has done a kind of an interesting technological advancement this year, the data van. Can you talk about that, Cosmo?
Well, they tried to, and the UCI told them it was against the rules, I think. But they had a special van that was equipped with all the rider data that they could get that was supposed to kind of manage that, take that information, process it, and then create, you know, actionable things, basically plays, I guess, that riders could run based on that information. And apparently it violated some rule, so it hasn't been able to be used to the fullest capacity. But there are still, you know, you still have a lot of communication between the team car and riders, which is, I think, generally good, because you can have teams working as well as they possibly can with all the information they can get, which to my mind makes it more interesting than just, you know, seeing who can pedal harder. There's definitely a time and a place for that. But what makes the sport interesting is how teams can help one, you know, help their leader perform well. And I will say the radios are great, but they don't always work. I forget who put it out. One of the smaller Belgian teams had an Instagram reel where they were kind of jokingly, they had the cameraman in the team car listening to the team director speak, and they had another one with one of the team members and their radio, and it was just static. You know, it was really, it gives you a real feeling for how iffy it can be, those radio connections during the race.
And if you watch Unchained, you'll see some of the seasons when they get into some of the drama internal to a team where, you know, maybe number two or number three on the team decides to go to be number one. You'll see them kind of reach up and just pull that mic right out of their, that speaker right out of their ear as they go off of the attack. And camera cuts back to the team captains of the car going, "What are you doing? What are you doing? Stop, pull off." So just a quick, in case you're just joining us, I'm David Strever, sitting in for Evan Dawson, and today on Connections, we are talking about the Tour of France and bike racing. I'm joined in person by Andy August of Park Ave Bikes and a bike racer himself. I'm joined by Scott Page of Full Moon Vista, and Cosmo Catalano of How the Race Was Won has called in from Massachusetts. So that time trial, the team time trial, I think that is... I don't know if they've ever officially said that's done, but I don't remember the last one I've seen in the Tour of France. I do think that was kind of famously boring for a lot of people to watch, but they've gone big with the individual time trial this year. And Cosmo, do you want to make a prediction on who's going to win that individual time trial on Sunday?
I don't know. I'm of two minds, right? Because Pogacar has looked so strong, and it's a very hilly time trial. It plays to his strengths. But at the same time, he's probably not going to be taking any risks because he's probably going to come into it with a big lead. There's a Belgian named Remco Evenepoel, who is an extremely good time trialist, probably the best in terms of technique in the race. The question is whether he, with his good line selection, which is with his really aerodynamic position on the bike, whether he can compensate for that lack of power versus Pogacar.
And he is the time trial champion of Belgium, right? This is his debut Tour of France, and he's third overall, and he is leading in another competition, the Young Rider competition, which is the wear of the white jersey. What's the age cutoff on that? Does anyone know the age cutoff?
I think
it's 25. It's 25 in the Tour. I think it's 23 in a lot of other races, though. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's the best of everyone under that age. I'll ask you, Andy, about the time trial, because I know you were an inspiration to Magnus Sheffield from Pittsford, who I got to interview recently for a story while he was recovering on a rest day at the Giro. after the time trial where he crashed, unfortunately, and lost a lot of time, but he's okay. He finished the race. He's going to represent the U.S. In Paris. Can you talk a little bit about the time trial discipline and what makes someone good at that?
Sure. Yeah. So the time trial is an individual effort, and it's against the clock. So you're out there on your own. So they call the time trial the race of truth because it's the strongest guy or rider will win the time trial. Magnus is a rider that has incredible power. He's probably top five time trialists in the world right now, and I think he would be better once he gets a little more, just figures it out a little bit more. He's going to get better and better. His power output is just incredible.
He's very. What do you remember? How old he is? His age?
He's 22.
22.
Yeah.
He's very young. He has a lot of time to learn and develop in that discipline.
That's right. Yeah. So it's going to be really exciting to see what Magnus can do in the Olympics this year. Yeah. He'll be racing the road race as well.
Yeah, and I know that's not his preferred discipline, but he should be a strong asset to the team there.
Yeah, he could be very helpful and could potentially do really well himself in that race.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw him. He was in the Giro d'Italia this year, which is the Italian version of the Grand Tour. There are three Grand Tours. There's La Vuelta a España, the Spanish, the Tour of France, and Giro d'Italia. Magnus had his debut in the Giro d'Italia this year, so it was his first time racing Grand Tour, and seems to have had a great time over there.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
Cosmo, do you want to talk about what defines a Grand Tour? Just kind of break down the what makes it up.
Sure, it's a 3 week long bike race. So every day, with maybe two rest days, inside of that period, they are racing bikes. So even during those 3 weeks, there are probably only a handful of stages that impact the overall classification, at least on paper. But there are every single day you have to start the race and finish the race. It's basically the thing that makes a Grand Tour different from a one-day race. There's a bunch of those in the spring in Belgium and in northern France that are very famous. But the Grand Tours have this certain prestige because it is so challenging to get to make yourself race consistently day after day after day for 3 weeks.
Absolutely. And it's a huge honor. I know that the Tour of France for most cyclists is probably, they probably rank that above the Olympics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the Tour de France and the Olympics are, especially for Americans, the two races people have heard of. So those are, certainly from the American point of view, the most prestigious. I think the Olympics is challenging because you're not riding with your professional team. You don't have that same teamwork aspect that you get at a race like the Grand Tour. So it's a little bit harder to target. And because it's just a one-day race, it's more of a crapshoot. There's more luck involved.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I love about bike races is a camaraderie, even with the rivals like Jonas and Tade or Remco, who all three of them, they're up at the top. They all want to beat the other, right? They're very friendly. You know, I think if you tune at the end, you'll see them shaking hands. You'll hear their post-race interviews where they give each other a lot of credit and talk about each other. That I find that kind of at all levels of biking. And to me, it's one of those things that really sets it apart from other sports. It's just a real warmth to it that.
Yeah, well, I think you need to have respect for your fellow riders, you know, especially when you're riding 30, 40, 50 miles an hour in a group and you're a couple inches away from your competitors. You have to respect and trust them. So I think there's a lot of things that make cycling a little more friendly than other sports. I wouldn't say that they're, all the greatest of friends, but they all have a lot of respect for each other.
Oh, and we have another caller who wants to know how they can follow it. Let me get Gordon. Oh, hey, Gordon, you're on.
Oh, thanks. My wife and I are moving, so our TV's in storage right now. We normally watch the tour on our TV at home. Are there any bars or any other venues where we can watch it, and go out and have a mimosa and watch the Tour de France?
That's a great question. There should be. If you're listening and you own a barn, do brunch? Call it if you do this.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I don't know specifically if there are. I mean, it's you can watch all the stages on Peacock, and a bar could foreseeably play that. They should.
Yeah. If you have a computer or even a phone, NBC has a streaming service called Peacock, which you can download. That's actually how I caught the end of the race before this today, was over my phone connection. But yeah, you can watch the race there. There's only two more days this year, but tomorrow will be very exciting, I'm sure. And then the time trial as well. So yeah, you could catch that there. And then I think you can watch the Olympics on the same app. If you have, there is a free version, but I think there's also, you may have to pay to get the full thing.
Okay. That's good information, and I hope some bartenders are listening and, advertise that, watch the Tour de France at their place, because we would definitely enjoy that.
Yeah, but please do call in if you're out there. Thanks so much, Gordon.
I will say, when I was in Fort Collins, Colorado, so 2 hours earlier, Illegal Pete's opened at 6 o'clock, so people could come in and watch the tour, and you had a surprisingly large crowd there, even for drinks, that early in the morning.
Fort Collins is a great bike town. I went to university there.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of the people who are doing very well in the bike races do come from there for the Americans. It's very unusual that we have two.
Except for Pittsford, New York.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, yeah, but Pittsford is a real outlier. Exception. And I'd love to ask you, do you have any insight, Andy, into why we've turned out two top-tier bike racers?
I've thought a lot about this, and we've had quite a few grassroots opportunities for kids to get on a bike and race a bike. I run a mountain bike series for about 30 years now, I think, and it's a weeknight series, and so it's very very low key. But I remember Magnus coming out when he was getting into cycling, and just the passion and the enthusiasm that he had, and obviously the talent that he showed was really impressive. Other things, back in the day when I was running Park Ave Bike, felt like a lot of my time was running events, which is kind of what I wanted to do. So we ran the bike races in the weekdays. We ran a 24-hour mountain bike race called the Hardcore 24. It's actually coming up this this weekend. I no longer race that, but it's or run that, but it's still going on. So, and I think Rochester and the community, we're just a community of doers. Not that other places aren't, but I don't have a great answer, but I think we've just had some role models and opportunities. So
that's great. Speaking about events, so there, the Tour of France is a whole thing, right? It's 21 days of your life are spent watching this. 5 to 6 hours a day. You don't have to watch the whole thing. You can just tune into the start and the finish too. But it's a big investment, but there's other ways to get into the sport of bike racing that are maybe even a little bit more accessible and maybe even more fun right here in Rochester. I want to point to you here, Scott. You organize up until now two bike races. Can you tell us a little bit about each one of those events?
Yeah, it was actually 20 years ago is when I started the Twilight Criterium, which was a downtown bike race that, after the first year, it turned professional, and it was a lot of fun to do. It ended a couple of years ago, and I don't foresee putting that back on again, but in the meantime, I also put on another one, which was called Rochester Cyclocross, and that started in 2008, and that's a UCI international event as well, and cyclocross is a great avenue for riders to get into the sport. It's not as technical as a mountain bike race, but it does have some off-road features to it, and it's very accessible for people. It's typically a 2.5K to 3.5K long course that you do repeated laps on, and it's got some technical features to it, and it's a lot of fun to watch. It's almost like an off-road criterium, and that event's in Genesee Valley Park right now, and it's interesting to have an event like that where there's only six of these in all of North and South America at this level, and one of them's in Rochester. So you get to witness some of these athletes coming from around the world that are they're at the highest level coming in to do this stuff. And it was fun watching Andy's kids do it when they were younger and Magnus. And I think one of the things that's happened in this town is they kind of push each other, you know, and these kids, one's going fast, the other one wants to go faster. And it's just been, a joy to watch them all come up through the ranks. And I noticed last week I was looking through some pictures of the events, and there was a picture of Andy's kids and Magnus and a couple other kids that are actually on the up and up, all at one of the races talking to one another. And, you know, when they were about 12 years old, it was kind of cute. And to see what these kids are doing now is amazing.
Oh, that's great. Cosmo, could you talk about what the UCI is just for people at home who are wondering why does that matter?
The UCI is the Union Cycliste Internationale, or basically the governing body for cycling. So it's sort of like the NFL or the NBA, except that they don't really put on that many races. They more kind of set the rules for what races need to do. And they are definitely in charge because they're under the IOC. But I think you'd ask any Bills fan, and they will probably have some opinions about how the NFL runs things. And I think you'll see the same thing in cycling, where there's a constant kind of general madness about the UCI.
Absolutely. And what I think is where I want to go with that with the Rochester Cyclocross is there's a point system, which the UCI, I think they kind of administer that, right? And so you earn points when you compete in events, depending on how you do. And that's part of what draws riders from Europe here to Rochester, New York, for this race in September. I remember seeing people from Germany, from all around the world, actually, at the last one. It's really cool to have that level of international talent come here and join a bike race.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be in September this year, and we've already got some riders coming in from Europe. There's a woman from the Netherlands that's sixth in the world, and there's an amazing woman named Magali Rochette from Canada. She comes every year. She's top 15, and there's one from France coming over. She's top 15 in the world. So it's like Cosmo was saying, it is a little maddening with the UCI. They're kind of a dictatorship. They tell you what you can do and how you should do it. But they're the only path. And, if you want to be in the NFL, you got to play by their rules. And it's not that bad, by the way. You just do what you need to do and put on a great event, and it ends up being wonderful. So it is really neat being able to see these athletes come to a place like Rochester. But when it comes to the points, it's a big thing for them. To simplify this, there's called Class 2s, there's Class 1s, and there's World Cups. Right now in the United States and Canada, there's no World Cups happening. All the World Cups are in Europe. And a Class 2 is the kind of the gateway to a UCI cyclocross race. And Class 1 is the next higher level. And you get more points the higher the event is. And depending on how many points you have, it's a better start position. And that's what these riders are really going for. You can fit about 8 riders across the course. That's about how wide it is. So once you get to the first 8, then you got your second, number 9 through 16 is behind them, and so on. So the closer you are to the front at the start, the easier it is to try to win that race. If you're in the last row and, there's 50 people or 60 people riding, it's really hard to get through all those if you're going to try to do that. So the higher points you have, better start position. So that's one of the reasons people want to come to the U.S. too, is to get their points. So when they go back over to Europe and do some of these World Cups, they have a better start line.
It's great that we give them that opportunity. And I was really glad to hear you mention the elite women who come here and race. That's been a real issue in bike racing for a long time, is just kind of the gender gap there. There is a Women's Tour of France. It's usually much smaller. It's held at a different time period, and it doesn't get the same media coverage as the main Tour of France. I was really hoping the Netflix people were here, because I was going to ask them, are you planning to do a Tour of France, a version of this documentary about the women's race as well? The Rochester Cyclocross seems to have really strong participation by women. Is there anything special that you guys have done to reach out and make sure that women know it's a good event for them too?
Not specifically, other than we just try to give them a platform to race on that is equal to men. And I think that's all they really want. It has been amazing to watch these women do what they do. And, you know, I'll just tell you a quick story that was a couple of years ago. Happened to be this woman, Magali Rochette from Canada. There's a section on the course that is incredibly difficult. It's an uphill with a lot of roots in it, and it's pretty vicious. One day you go up, the other next day you go down. Well, on the up day, everybody was running up this. They had to jump off their bike and run up this hill. And when the race started for the women, there were a bunch of men's pro that were out watching just in the last moments before they had to go back and get ready to race. And they're on that one section, and doesn't Magali come around, and she rode it. And I happened to be there, and it was actually comical because these men let out a sigh, and they're like, oh, darn, now I got to try to ride this thing. You know, but that's the kind of level that these women are at. They're so much fun to watch. It's they're incredible.
That's great. I'm sorry. We got a couple. If you emailed into the show, I'm very sorry. I missed your emails. And Julie just gave me the heads up now that they're in here. We actually had someone reach out to say they want to hear more from you about the cyclocross a few minutes ago. So I'm glad we got to talk about that. Sorry, I'm just seeing what else was in here. Someone wrote in to say they wanted to give a lot of props to Magnus Sheffield and great work with helping him get to where he is. And I think that's about it. That's about it for our emails. Thank you, Julie. So again, I'm David Strever. I'm singing in for Evan Dawson. And today on Connections, we're talking about the Tour of France, bike racing, Rochester cyclocross. I've got Scott Page in here from Full Moon Vista, Andy August, bike racer and former owner of Park Ave Bikes, and Cosmo Catalano is on the line from Massachusetts. So we have a bunch of people here, and we are here to answer your calls as well. You can call us at 844-295-TALK, 8255. That's the toll-free number. And you could also email, and I promise I will try to get your email. So thank you for reaching out, and I appreciate your patience with us. Back to the cyclocross, my daughter is 5 years old, and she's super inspired by it. We saw it the first year I moved here, and then again last year. It honestly, if you've never been to a bike race, I can't think of a better introduction to the sport, because you go there, you can get a bratwurst from Swan's Market, and there's beer on tap, and it's a great, pleasant place to hang out. Lots of trees and coverage, and you can just stand there and watch the racers go and go and go. It's very different from a longer race like the Tour of France, where you wait for hours on the side of the road and they go by one time and then it's over, right?
Yeah, I really like cyclocross. It was great for our family and Magnus. It's a wonderful family event where my wife and I race, the kids race, and we're all contained in one park, so we didn't have to worry about the kids like riding on the open roads and seeing them only once in the day. So it's really a great form of racing.
And actually, we have a caller who wants to talk about the criterium. I'm going to patch him through. This is Travis. Oh, hey, Travis, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. So you watched the Twilight Criterium in person?
Yes, I was there the last year that it ran, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. I want to do this. So I started training, and then I joined GVCC. I've been racing with Trevor August quite a bit this season, and cycling in Rochester, the racing scene, it's so welcoming, and it's a really great community. So I highly recommend to anybody who's thinking about getting into cycling or cycling racing, definitely check out GVCC. There is a Tuesday night race that is crit style on August 6th. Out in Fishers. So if you're looking to get inspired by a cool race, that would definitely be one I would check out.
And that's the thank you so much, Travis. That is the Genesee Valley Cycling Club. Magnus also talked that up with me when I interviewed him. He said it was a great way to get into racing. We'll put a link to that on the website after this episode goes up as a podcast, in case you're trying to find out how to connect with them. And then I have another call. Oh, and actually, you know, I'm sorry. I'm going to ask you, Scott, the criterium is that that is done for good, right? That's not coming back.
I don't foresee that coming back. It's an incredibly expensive event to put on, to close down the city streets and close down the city. And it takes a lot of support. And, you know, well, I never say never, but, you know, my focus now is really on the cyclocross race, which was at a higher level, even though what the crit was. So I'm kind of putting all my eggs in that basket for a while.
Yeah, and the crit is held on public roads. That's the biggest difference there. It is a circuit. It was down by the library, going over those bridges. It was a beautiful spot for it, but yeah, that makes sense that would be a lot more expensive and difficult to put on. And then we have another call from Scott in Penfield.
Hey Scott,
you're on. Do you want to talk to us about your experience?
Yeah. First of all, I want to just call out. A big call out to Scott Page and Andy for their contribution. They probably know me. I do a lot of bike advocacy. They probably know who I am right now. Anyways, I've been to the tour a couple times. I've done some of the mountain stages, and it's just an amazing thing. I guess that there are a couple points. One is these are the best athletes in the world, and so you have two of some of the best athletes in the world. Exercise physiologists study these racers because there's nobody quite at their level. So the other thing is in terms of the tour, it's kind of an amazing event. And I think Andy mentioned that, you know, all you see them is at the end. If you do go to a tour event, it's pretty amazing to watch them up on the mountains coming up. It's so personal, whereas with other pro athletes, you're never that close. The other part is if you're ever at the end of a race for like a stage race where they finish with a sprint, don't go to the end because they'll just fly by at 40 or 50 miles an hour. But go where the buses are, and you'll actually see them coming off the races, and you get to actually see individual racers, which is an amazing – you just see the complexity of what the system does. It's literally the tour is like an opera. It's like a 3-week opera because somebody can win a race one day and the next thing they crash out, and there's all sorts of ups and downs. It's a very complex thing, and so if you ever get interested in it, it's a lot of fun to follow.
It's kind of a live circus, right? You're right there. And we've seen, if you watch on TV, you will be astonished if you've never seen it before, just how close the fans are. You're not supposed to do this, but you see fans run up and slap the riders on the back. Recently, we saw a fan throw potato chips at Tadej Pogačar and then Jonas Vingegaard. I believe he was arrested for that. If you go, don't mess with the riders, but it is a unique opportunity to be that close to those people.
Yeah, it's something to add. I'm sorry about that. If you go and ride some of these climbs that the riders are doing, you can do that before the race gets there. You can time your time up the climb, and then look and see how fast the pros do it, and it's just it's truly astonishing.
Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
All right, and then I'm going to read off an email from Charles, who wrote in to say he's a longtime Tour de France fan. He's been following it since 1965 when Boys Life magazine used to cover it. That was a whole different era of cycling coverage in America. And he said he had to ask his mom, I'm going to get this name wrong, but he had to ask his mom how to pronounce Eddie Merckx's name. I think I got that right.
I think
you
got it.
You got it right.
And he cheered for Greg LeMond, who battled with the Frenchman Bernard Hinault in the 80s. He says it's his favorite sporting event of the year, the soundtrack of his summers, and his kids have been indoctrinated since the 1990s. So have my kids. Well, more recent, but yes, they're also indoctrinated. And his most prized possession is a King of the Mountain jersey his son brought home for him in 2006 when he was visiting France and saw the now disgraced American racer Lance Armstrong. He says he who will remain nameless. So, and he said he was screaming at the TV watching Cavendish get that 35th stage win, which all of us were right there with you, Charlie. I'm sure that was Charles, that was a pretty exciting day. No, we are. We're closing on the end of our hour. But is there anything you guys want to say to anyone out there who wants to get into this? Any words of encouragement or advice?
Probably the big thing is just, look up. There's a lot of clubs in town. We have a lot of bike clubs, which is really neat. There's something you can find that will fit you. And one of the nice things about the club is about these clubs, if you contact any of them, tell them what you want to do, and they might even set you to a different one. So they all know each other. They all want you to do whatever riding works for you. So even if you called up GVCC, to speak of that one, and if it's not correct for you, they will probably point you in the right direction. So there's a lot of opportunities.
It's a super friendly community here. When I first moved here, I found Reconnect Rochester, which was also, they're a bit more bike and transit advocacy, but they were really helpful at kind of pointing me towards the race-oriented clubs and the different ways to get out on a bicycle. And then for following the tour, I would say if you've got a couple days, if you got NBC, you could watch it there. If you don't have TV, you can get on Peacock. I think it's like $8 a month. And you could just subscribe for 1 month and get a couple more days of bike racing, and then watch the Olympics. You could cheer for Magnus Sheffield. I'm sure you will be, Andy.
Absolutely, yeah. Another way to follow the tour, if you're not watching TV, is you can watch it or read about it on the internet. I go to a website called Pro Cycling Stats. You get all the statistics you would ever want. They do a good job of telling you what's going on each stage and what lies ahead. So.
Yeah. And Cosmo, where can people find your stuff?
I'm on Instagram at How the Race Was Won, and I work with Escape Collective. It's escapecollective.com, where there's tons of reporting, a bunch of colleagues on the ground right now. I do a podcast with Dane Cash, who works there, where we kind of cover the race action as things go on.
Hey, you guys do great work. I really recommend it to anyone who's out there and curious about this. You make it look really fun. Thank you so much, Cosmo, for joining us. Thank you so much, Scott. Thank you so much, Andy. It's been really great, and I really appreciate you guys coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Great to be here.